that's that. Now, first off, let's get back to where we were. On the 3rd of January, 3rd or 4th of January, we started off by talking about this word Hineni, which only occurs a few times in the Hebrew Bible, which actually means here I am, you have my total attention. And I put forward the idea that it could be brilliant if this year all of us as people within Dayspring said to God, here I am, I'm totally available to you, what you want is my agenda. And it might be that we would find out that we were the people that we were looking for. You know, we're the people who can offer the answers. So that's the context. The second week that I spoke, we actually talked about one of the celebrities of the three big one God religions, and that was Abraham. And that Abraham, we pointed out, was not terribly brilliant as a family man. He struggled a bit in that sort of area and misstepped a few times, but that he had the ultimate key characteristic as far as pleasing God was concerned, which is faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. With faith, well, that's not the only thing that counts. It is amazing what can actually happen. Now, I just wanted to make a passing comment here about what you do with the Old Testament. Now, the Old Testament can seem very strange to read at times, and if you want a safe and easy starting way to look at it, it's actually explained in Corinthians very simply, where it says the things that happened to those people work for us as examples. And you use and you get the best out of the Old Testament with, excuse me, that rather than trying to find rules and details and sentences which say you must do this, because otherwise you might find that you need to wipe out complete families and destroy all property, that you just actually pick up the examples and work from there. So Abraham is an example of faith. We don't have to do everything he did. And today we're going to go on to another celebrity, one who you'll know quite a bit about, I'm sure, and that's Moses. Moses lived 400 or 500 years after Abraham, probably, so a long time after. You've got to think in terms of, what, Elizabethan England, the first Elizabeth to the second Elizabeth, that kind of interval. It was a long time afterwards. And you know how he started out, how what had happened, the Israelite people were living in Egypt. They'd been brought there through Joseph, who had been the saviour of the Egyptian nation all that period before. And it actually says at the start of the book of Exodus, people forgot about Joseph in Egypt. They forgot that these Israelite people, these slightly different people, had been the ones who had saved them from starvation. And what was happening is that you were getting an increase in population among Israelite people. So you can see this in the context of racism. It's where you get, you know, sort of basically what happened was the Egyptians were okay with the Israelites while they were a minority. But when the birth rate, and it was an issue of birth rate, increased, there was a real problem. So what they said was, look, the best way around this is that any boys that are born, midwives should kill them straight away. And midwives wouldn't connive with this, and eventually they had to put out a general edict that any male child that was born to the Israelites should be killed. So that's the context. Seems absolutely impossible for us to get our mind around. But don't forget that the biggest genocides that have ever existed in the world have all happened just over the last 100 years. So not too far away. And somehow we've got to develop the ability to put ourselves in other people's shoes there. So, here we go. Stories told that mother hid baby for a while and thought, I'm not going to let him kill my baby. I don't know what I can do. And so she prepared a little basket and she put tar on it inside and out and floated the baby off. Just like the story of leaving the baby on the police station steps. I can remember when I did my first social work placement, I did it in Tower Hamlets and in Archer House, which was by the Low Road flyover. At that time they had more children in care than any other authority. It was the only place where you got 5 day a week juvenile court working at the time. And they were one of the things you were told on the first day is if a parent walks into the into reception with a group of children or with a child and says, I'm just popping out for a moment, you don't let them do it, because that was a real big problem and you had to spend your time finding them afterwards. It was it happens all over. But, and can you just imagine the kind of stress that somebody burned around under those sort of circumstances? And it must have sort of paralleled, because Moses' mother didn't know who was going to find the baby, whether it would be an Egyptian who would happily drown the child or somebody would ignore him. And she sent his big sister to watch, Miriam. And anyway, long and short of it was that the daughter of Pharaoh, Princess, came down, found the baby, took pity on him, took him home, raised him as her son. Now, we don't really know what happened, but we know that that Moses had some issues with identity, because, of course, he wasn't totally Egyptian. He was an Israelite. He was really as mixed up as you could get. But he began increasingly to identify with his own people. On one occasion, he came along and saw an Egyptian knocking a Hebrew around and killed the guy. Interesting, in response to bullying. And when somebody is being bullied, it can sometimes happen that people who are naturally weak, not very good at fighting, get stuck in themselves and react in a way which is disproportionate. I was thinking about this, and it just struck me this morning as I was reading the story again, that every fight I got into as a kid was because somebody else was being bullied. I wasn't that kind of person, but something would snap and I would be the one in front of the headmaster's desk because of what happened. And that wasn't perhaps because Moses was particularly brave, but somehow his identifying with the person who was bullied really made him snap. And the interesting thing is he then had to do a runner because the word got round. What happened was one day he killed the Egyptian. The next day he found two Hebrews sort of arguing and he started to intervene and they said, what are you going to do? You're going to kill us just like you killed the Egyptian. And you just imagine the colour draining out of his face of being absolutely sick as he thought he'd done a pretty good job of burying this other guy. And so the word got round, he became a wanted person and he ran off into the desert to another group of people, the Midianites. And what happened there was that there were 7 young women who looked after their father's sheep. He was a sort of occult priest, and they were trying to take their sheep to the well, and some local shepherds came along and said, this is our water, it's not yours. And hey, once again, Moses gets stuck into something that's none of his business, sees people being bullied, and all on his own turns the shepherds away and allows the girls to get their water. They take him home to meet their father. He says, what a relief, another male around here. And he ends up married to one of them, once again in a different culture. to the one that was his own. So what you've got is a Hebrew brought up in Egypt, living in Midian, and married to the daughter of a priest from that area. And what I'm going to do now is to show you the clip from the next event, because the next story we're told is of how Moses is out looking after the sheep. Okay, he's out looking after the sheep. And I don't know, I suppose the good news for him was that he was safe. The bad news was that he'd been brought up in a palace, and here he was, you know, just wandering around on his own with sheep. The good news for him was that he was now married, and he'd got children, he'd got a family of his own. The bad news for him was that he was alienated from his own people, didn't understand what was happening to them, had got very little connection. And as you watch this video, really, I suppose the question for you to ask is, what do you think about it? Does it ring true for you? Does it sort of make sense? Could you imagine that's how it happened? Anyway, see the thing. About 5 minutes long.
raise your hand and then withdraw it. This will be the sign that you speak with the voice of the Lord that God.
Okay, that was Ben Kingsley, by the way, which felt it was on top of Hindu. Can you open that so we can get some light? Thanks. Well, how did you feel? Did it ring true? Well, could you have imagined it happening like that? Yeah. Strange, isn't it? It's very difficult to imagine how other people encounter God, and that's one of the things I'd like us to try and get to in a minute or two. Now, what we had last week was we had Abraham, didn't we? And Abraham was a very up for it sort of person. Today we've got Moses, who was the interesting thing is you've got actually five in this short passage which goes on for about 40 verses, you've got five different objections Moses makes, his doubts, his fears and so on. But from what you know about Moses, and you know most of what there is to know about Moses and Abraham, what would you say the differences are between the two guys? Let's see if we can assemble a list of differences.
Self-awareness.
In what way?
Well, Moses knows to recognise all of his...
Can you switch that up for me then? So I don't get the line.
Moses is aware of all his problems and why he's not great in bringing them to this, whereas Abraham seems to be much more confident or oblivious.
Confident, insecure, I guess, is... Abraham's oblivious. He just, you know, God said it, I'll do it. Stab your son to death, that's fine, but I'll bring him back again. You know, sort of... mind you, having lived all that time with the main father of nations when he didn't even have one child, it must have made you develop pretty thick skin, really. What else?
Their position within like God's community was completely different. Abraham was like the leader of the family, and God had spoken to him lots for a long time. He knew who God was.
Yeah, okay, let me do this. The first thing was central and outside, let's say. Abraham knew God, yeah?
Yeah. And like Moses, he was brought up by the Egyptians. He probably didn't really know much about his culture and his religion.
Yeah. I think in culture... out of culture. And you've got ignorant in terms of knowledge of God. Anything else?
Abraham was willing to do what he wanted to do, and Moses was rejecting.
Yeah. I think willing and unwilling is just... Anything else?
Charismatic. When Abraham was clearly his leader, was Moses. It's good machine.
Moses had a sort of fear of man, didn't he? Who am I to go to Pharaoh and Israel? I don't know if that's true, sort of thing. What people for.
Feared people.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the fear was different, because in fact you could have actually looked at this in terms of fear and anxiety, because it was a very rational fear, arguably, in Abraham's case, and a sort of diffuse anxiety there with Moses. Anything else?
Moses had tried and failed.
Yeah. In fact, Abraham, didn't appear to have much of a midlife crisis, other than the one that was forced on him. There was a lot of failure in Moses and a lot of success in Abraham. Look, here's where I want to get to with this. Here are the two first people in the Bible who God speaks to, and they say, "Here I am." And in terms of personality experience, they're just about as opposite as you can be. And what that does is smacks on the nose our assertion that I'm not that kind of person. I'm not the kind of person that God speaks to. I'm not the kind of person with the skill set, with the attributes that are necessary. I'm no good. I'm not the, I can understand why God speaks to Andy or Philippa. I can understand why God's calling them to do something, but I'm not like that. I don't have that. I haven't been a Christian as long. I don't know as much about God. I'm not part of the leadership. I don't fit in with everybody else. I don't have the sort of charismatic ability. I'm not bubbly, I'm not open, I don't find it easy to mix with people. I'm naturally anxious, my background has given me a set of problems. And over that, God writes, rubbish. And to this guy, who had got no experience at all, he comes and speaks. And I want to go through just this very intense conversation where Moses talks about his disqualifications over these few verses. So what happens first of all is God calls him out of the bush, and Moses responds, "Hinani, you have my attention, my total attention." Now the first thing Moses says to God is, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh?" And here's an intriguing trick here, which actually shows that the problem is often not that we think too little of ourselves, but that we think too much of ourselves. And that was the problem. So if God speaks to you and says, "I want you to do this great thing," and you say, "I'm not good enough," God's response to that is, "Who the hell was asking you about how good you were? You know, I'm the one who's going to do it." Okay? Have you ever thought about that before? That our response, which says, "I'm no good," when we bring that to God, God's response to us is, "Yeah, well, what's new? Yeah? Oh, I can't do that." "No, that's good. That's qualification." Yeah? Because God is the one who's at work. And God's response is, "I will be with you." Okay? Now, so that's one question. Not going to go into these in any great depth, because the answers are pretty obvious. The second one that happens is that Moses then says to God, "All right, okay, suppose I do this. Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' What shall I tell them?" Okay? My theological education is inadequate. I don't know enough about God. And then God says, "All you need to know is that I am has sent you." Now, that sounds weird to us. It sounded just as weird to Moses. Okay? To talk about God, to go to people and speak to them about God's love, having some doubts is actually a qualification. you know, most of your colleagues at work, most of your family members, most of the people you know, will only be put off if you trot out the answers in a way which shows you haven't even been thinking. Yeah? Have you ever thought about what God's like? Have you ever asked yourself the questions about why is it that God appears to tell Joshua to wipe out whole nations? Have you asked the question about what is God doing allowing the Haiti earthquake to happen? Really easy one to answer with that. Somebody pointed out during the week that the Haiti earthquake is not about an act of God. It's about an act of humanity. Because apparently they reckon that the last LA earthquake was at the same sort of intensity and in the same density of population. Know how many people died there? 63. Mm. Yeah? That's about poverty. Now, when famines come in Africa, famines affect populations that are traumatised by war. It's not the famine that's the issue. It's the war that's the issue. And every time people try and put it on God, you've got two factors. One, that don't actually understand the facts. And two, that they're suggesting that with our mind we ought to be able to understand how God works. And I don't know. I find that more and more when people ask me about things, I just actually have to say, yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem. And I want to suggest something to you when you're conversing with people that air their doubts that you might find useful towards the end of the session. But suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? I am that has sent me. Does that make you feel secure? No? Didn't Moses either. So, first of all, Moses has got issues with himself. And I've said quite often, having issues with ourselves. It's not so much that we feel very negatively about ourselves. We feel that we matter. You know? So it's actually a form of big-headedness that give us those problems. The second is that Moses had problems with God, and God still spoke to him. The third thing is really interesting. Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Okay, well, that's pretty good. You get that happen? If you try to tell a testimony of healing, story of healing, the reaction that you will get from people is almost universally, oh, well, that could just have happened. You know, it's just one of those things. People will believe any explanation other than that it was God that did it. Always easy to believe something else than that. And for Moses, there was a story to be told. And I want to come back to this because I think there's something really important here, which is a word to us which is almost outside of my general message and argument, and that's this. God told Moses, chuck your stick on the ground. Now, really scary, it shows up in the film, it's pretty scary as well, doesn't it? You throw your stick on the ground, it turns into a snake. Right? Now, what does God say to him? Pick it up by the tail. Yeah? Now, I don't know whether you've got very much experience of snakes. I find the whole thing about snakes, because I don't get too close to them, profoundly irritating. Because in most places in Africa, with the local people, snakes cause a lot of problems. And I can remember not so long ago, nearly 10 years now, I suppose, last time I was in Zim, and we were teaching, there were a whole group of young people in their early 20s, and beside the girls' rondelle, the little house, Thatcher house they were in, there was somebody had seen a snake going through the air pen. And this, of course, caused great fuss when they were supposed to be doing prep for the next session that I was teaching. And so the guys all come along, and there's about 25 people standing around. I'm sure you've seen sort of thing. 25 people standing around with looking to see what's happening, ready to run backwards. And one guy with a stick poking at the thing. But nobody had got the poking at the hole to see what would come out. But nobody had got the intention of picking up. And, you know, sort of, we spoke to them about this and said, you need to concentrate on what you're supposed to be doing, not on seeing who's going to be the hero and rescue the snake. I tell you what, mixed classes in theological colleges are just as bad as mixed classes anywhere else. And in terms of getting people to concentrate on what they're supposed to be concentrating on, but there you go, I'm a boring old fart when it comes to that. I'm not people concentrate on what I'm talking about, not on one another. The following day, I came across a group of European boys who were there. This was at the Youth of Christ Centre, and they were carefully skinning a snake, which they'd shot with their dad's 303, really old rifle, and they'd shot it there. And I was watching them doing this, and they were enjoying themselves. And their puppy came across, and immediately their father reacted differently and shouted at them and said, don't let the dog bite the snake because of the venom that was in the snake. And so I've got these two pictures of one, snakes are a bit of a silly issue, with the other leaders, of course, the African leaders, of course, saying, what are they fussing about? And then this sort of real intensity about the danger of being bitten by a snake, or having your animals bitten by a snake. And you've got to pick that up, you know, because snakes are so remote from us. It's almost like grabbing a tiger by its tail. I don't know what the, you know, sort of pick up the live wire, you know, by the end. It's ridiculous. Nobody would pick up a snake by its tail anyway. Because it's in the best possible position to turn around and stick its fangs in you. But God was wanted to do something with them, him, and Moses did it. And then, if that wasn't a big enough attack, the next thing that happened was God said to him, stick your hand in your coat, pulled his hand out, got leprosy. Put his hand back in, hands clean again. God can do miracles. And I think that there's another area of fear, and there's this fear which connects with encounter. And I was talking to Carl Wills this week. We were talking to Carl Wills this week, and one of the things that he said, and I want to try and bring us back to this in a couple of minutes, if I can, is I'm not going to contend for the presence of God. You know, if we are relying on God turning up and he doesn't turn up, that's God. If we're asking for him to come and presence himself among us, and he presences himself among us, that's it. And that's the way it's to be. We can't make it happen. But the interesting thing with Moses, which I don't think God did with anybody else, he went through a whole list of, if they don't listen to me, I'm going to do this, and if they don't listen to that, I'm going to do that, and if they don't listen to that, I'm going to do that, if I don't, and God laid out his plan. He knew what he was going to do. Fourth question, or the fourth issue that Moses raised is this. Moses said to the Lord, O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to me, to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. And while I think it's okay to express our doubts to God, you do have to watch it, because sometimes if we duck the issue, we miss out on things that could have happened for us. You know, there's this famous bit in the Bible where it says that God gave the Israelites what they asked for, which was food, but he sent them malnutrition in their souls. You ever come across that? Oh Lord, I can't do this, can't do that, can't do the other. Well, I'll help you. Oh, well, I still feel I can't do it. All right, I'll use somebody else. And then we go through our lives feeling frustrated, because we haven't quite responded to God in the way that he wants us to. Now, I don't know whether that fits for you, but that's a bit off what I was going to say this morning. And you know, doubt is okay. Being up for it, being confident is fine. But being insecure and doubting is also okay. God doesn't criticise Moses at any point through this. Do you actually believe that? You're willing to grab hold of that? That, yeah, having the questions is okay. But you know, Moses says the next thing, and then it says that God's angry with him. And what was it that Moses said? You see, the next thing that Moses...
Not me.
He said, I don't want to go. Right? And what was happening there is that Moses was giving excuse. And then when all his excuses are taken out the way, he responds with, I don't want to. And that's the point at which God gets angry, when we're unwilling. You know, when we say to Jesus, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief, he's okay with that. But when somebody puts their hand to the plough and then looks back, Jesus isn't so sympathetic to that. So don't confuse doubt with unwillingness. Don't confuse genuine doubt with making excuses. When I found myself with argumentative people talking about faith, I've sometimes found it useful to say to them, look, okay, you've got a set of questions here. If I answered your questions, would you then be ready to follow Jesus? Worth asking sometimes. And quite often, the answer would be, no, not really. Why? Because I want to do life my way. I want to be selfish. Even if there is a God, even if God died for me and is willing to change my life, I don't want that, because I want life the way it is. And that was the issue that Moses had to resolve. And in fact, you can just imagine at that point, that was the point which God shouted at him. Because what happens then is God says, go. Your brother's coming and he'll do the talking for you, but you're going to go. It was compulsory service. And all the way through Moses' life, you get the impression that he really didn't want the job. But he did say, here am I. Okay? And you know, when we get to that point where we say, here am I, I'm wholly available, ready to respond, there's no deal in it. What we do know, and this is what I said right at the beginning of January, is that God is interested in taking us into our discomfort zone. Right? Don't care where you are at the moment, God wants you in your discomfort zone. Why does God want you in your discomfort zone? Because however insecure you are, you're still too cocky by half. Right? Because we've got to rely on him. God wants us in a position where when we stand up, when we move out, we have no choice but to listen to him. So please don't consider that being an outsider or being ignorant of God or being out of culture or even being unwilling or fearful of people or having experienced failure or being insecure is a disqualification. Not actually a qualification either, but God doesn't care about those things. Because he only wants people who will listen to him and do what he's asking them to do. And I think that's for some people, there's a word this morning, and it's a word which is just simple. And it is, grab it by the tail. I don't know what you're fiddling around with and poking a stick at the moment, or looking at and thinking that could bite me. Yeah? But there are one or two people this morning who God is saying to, grab it by the tail. Now last week, Andy did a little exercise with us in the meeting that we haven't done for a while. And I want to just, if you can for 5 minutes, go back to the core of that exercise, which is about being aware of the presence of God. You know that one of my concerns is that whatever we do on a Sunday morning is transferable to Monday. Right? If you rely on something on a Sunday morning where you get a warm feeling from God in the worship, and you're not able to get that same warm feeling during the week, unless you get it through chocolate or going on porn sites or any of that sort of corrupt stuff, which substitutes for the presence of God, then there's something wrong. We're not doing worship right. Okay? Because it's all about being able to live 24/7 by the power of God within us. And when we come together, the revelation that we grab hold of in worship and corporate worship is important. It's hugely important. We're going to be doing it all the time when we get to heaven. Then we miss out on something. And this is why I'm really interested in this issue of awareness. So I'm just going to take you for 3 minutes through this thing that I do from time to time. I know that for some of you it doesn't seem to work, and for others of you it does seem to touch something. But I do believe that awareness of God is something that is our birthright. You know, that we can be aware of God, but it's not supposed to be a strange thing that we're conscious of God. And the difference between what Andy said and what I'm saying this morning is I don't want you to imagine God anywhere. You see, we believe that Jesus is here right now, don't we? That's what we've invested in. Jesus is here. That is a fact. Okay? So what's the problem if we can't feel him here? The problem is with our feelings, not with the presence of Jesus. So will you just sit with your eyes closed for a moment or two? I'm not going to pinch your money. So you close your eyes with confidence. And I want you to be conscious at the moment of anything which would lead you to be would be a barrier to being aware of the Lord Jesus. Any preoccupation that you have, and bring that thing into captivity, grab hold of it and put it to one side. I won't list anything because your issues may be different to mine, but just place it to one side. And then I want you to ask the question, where is the Lord for you just now? Is he inside you? Is he to the left of you? Is he to the right of you? Is he in front of you? Is he above you? Is he behind you? Just be aware of him. And if those preoccupations try to force themselves in, just put them to one side. And be clear about where Jesus is for you right now. And as you're aware of Jesus right now, just say to him, Hineni, here I am, totally available. Because he is here. Here I am. And just be aware of anything that he wants to say to you at this point in time. Just try and anchor that. And now just in your heart, thank him for his presence. If you haven't been able to discern his presence on this occasion, because for some people it's difficult in a group, then thank him that whether you feel it or not, whether you're aware of it or not, his presence is real. Amen. Okay. you may find from time to time that one of the best ways of getting in with when you're on your own is what Andy said last week, and just imagining God being there in a particular posture. That's okay as a starting place. The reason why we want to get to real awareness is that sometimes you'll find God in a different position to the way you expected. And I just so you can take this away, what happened for me last Sunday was this. I'm in the meeting, I'm worshipping, Andy does this thing, right? And did you actually ask people, what does God say? How do you react to God, or what does God say? Because I didn't pay particular attention once we started the process. I can't remember what happened.
Philip is right, I can't remember.
Yeah. But what happened for me was that I suddenly became aware of the Lord being close to me. And do you know what came out of my mouth? Because quite often, in these circumstances, the thing that's telling is the surprising thing you say. And do you know what my reaction at that point was? So you are in control then. In a very accusative way, came out. And I found myself just interacting with God on that. And it probably said more about it. Well, it did say more about me than where the Lord Jesus is and what he's doing. And my next thing came out to me, I wish you would act as though you were in control a bit more. Yeah? And I find that quite often the conversations I have with the Lord are a list of my criticisms of the way he's operating. In a way that if I'm operating in rational mode, where my head goes first, rationalistic mode, it really doesn't help at all. And quite often, that awareness of God, which you need to practice every day, as much of the day as you can, even if now and then you have to shut yourself in the loo, to say, Lord, where are you for me right now? And it may seem a bit blasphemous to the consciousness that is in the loo with you. But whatever. To just find that space. Because you're not going to get a burning bush. I know that next week somebody will come in and say they had a burning bush this week, and they just proved me wrong. But you're not normally going to get a burning bush. Because the burning bush thing was at a much lower level than we're living at the moment. You see, God came on rare occasions. If you look, perhaps about 40 years, 100 years, and would suddenly reveal himself to somebody. But we have the presence of Jesus with us all the time. So that's one of the reasons why we only use the Old Testament as examples, because it ain't going to happen like that. Burning bushes, donkeys speaking to you, putting out fleeces, that's all Old Testament stuff. Knowing the presence of God and expressing your doubts to him is what it's really all about. Okay? That will do for today.
Thank you.
Thanks.